Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is a very special episode. Joining me to chat it up, Kyle Porter is here. KP, hello, sir.
How are we doing? I'm back from the F1 junket. You're back from wherever you were yesterday. I actually don't know. And ready to rock and roll.
That's a secret where I was yesterday. Mark Immelman. I'll tell you. Mark Immelman is here. Hi, Mark.
Hey, boys. Nice to be with you. No secrets where I am. I'm at home. I'm just chilling, giving golf lessons. Regular me, so good to be with you guys.
I was at Disneyland yesterday, but I didn't want to tell people I was at Disneyland because I told Josh Pryor I couldn't do Tuesdays. We had this planned out that everybody else could do Tuesday, and I was like, well, don't switch because of me, but I was having fun.
So what's your favorite ride at Disneyland then?
Well, first of all, you have the free, you can take like 10 of these off because you've banked up enough, like, oh, covering for Kyle, covering for Mark, you know, covering for whoever. So yeah, what was the best part of yesterday?
Indiana Jones. That's the ride. That's the go-to. It's well thought out. Great theme. Great ride. It's awesome.
And by the way, I don't think it's covering for us, Kyle. I think when Rick is on, it's the A team. So it's just installing the favorites for the show.
Is what it is. We're making the show better by not showing up.
True. All right. Words.
Well, we do have a fourth today. We've got him. You know exactly who he is. He has been in the news for, oh my gosh, coming up on a year here because of the way that he jumps onto the scene at last year's PGA Championship. Michael Block is joining us. Michael, good to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it here in the home office at Arroyo Chubico Golf Club.
Yeah, working hard. Look at you.
Did you run into him at Disney yesterday? Or
No, unfortunately.
No chance am I going to be at Disney. Yeah.
No. That's the first time I'd ever been there, Michael. It was pretty tame for a Tuesday morning. There wasn't large crowds, but it's not generally my scene.
Yeah, no, I had a lot of anxiety the one time I ever went there, and I just had to leave. I couldn't handle that. Too many little kids running around and stuffed animals, so I was over it.
And Michael, looking at your view behind you, there's way more paper than there are golf clubs and stuff in your office over there. You got a real job too, huh?
Yeah, no, I mean, everyone's like, oh, after the PGA, I'm like, no, are you kidding me? I still need to run a club. And I absolutely love doing it. And I love this course. I love being here. I wouldn't change it for the world. And yeah, I still have to come back and I have to work really hard because I haven't been here as much as normal, obviously. But when I am here, I got to work my tail off and catch up.
So it begs the question then, how much do you get to practice when you're back home?
Boy. I'm in the PGA Tour event next week and I might get an hour in a day right now.
How is the current state of your game?
I don't even know, really. I mean, I've been playing like stupid YouTube golf and crap where it's like not even golf. And I don't know. I kind of want to get back out there and play some money games with my boys, you know, and do stuff like that. Because that's when, you know, that's what really helps me get ready for a PGA Tour event. You know, when it's under the gun and feeling that pressure and you got to make your own ball for that score. Yeah, it feels good. I feel great. I've been working hard, trying to create a little more speed in my swing, half a mile an hour at a time, basically. But it's been good. I feel good going to next week because I love Cabo San Lucas, and I've always loved playing in golf tournaments there.
Yeah, that's going to be cool to see. I mean, the listeners and the viewers of this show – they're tapped in. So they know the Michael Block story. So we don't need to rehash every step along the way, but I kind of want to get your thoughts on what I feel is the moments of kind of before Michael Block and after Michael Block for the vast majority of us. I mean, we sat together. I think it was Kyle, myself, and you Friday afternoon at Oak Hill. And we were like, here's Michael Block, PGA pro. He just made the cut. This is a great story. And from that moment on, it felt like great story went just bonkers, right? So, I mean, that night, that Friday night feels like such a turning point in the way that most people view Michael Block. Does that kind of line up with the way that you're seeing things here?
Yeah, my life has been literally turned upside down since that Friday. There's no doubt about it. Nothing's really seems to be the same except when I'm sitting here in my office, but now I'm, you know, obviously with you guys doing a podcast. So it's definitely even changed, I guess, in my office as well, but I'm trying to keep everything as normal as possible. My wife and my kids keep me super grounded. That's for sure. And I've really learned to really enjoy hanging out with my dog on the golf course more than ever.
Yeah. I'm curious about that week. There's so many different moments that I think even I remember from your 4 days there and that fans remember from watching on TV. What other than the one with Rory, obviously, what's the moment where you're like, man, I kind of can't believe this is happening. I'm sure there were several of them, but is there one that kind of sticks out?
You know, I mean, there were so many of them. I mean, it just started like in our Wednesday practice round when Cam Smith comes up to myself and I'm playing with Kenny Pigman, another PGA professional, one of my buddies here in SoCal. And he comes up to us and goes, hey, do you mind if I play a practice round with you? And I'm just like, what? I'm like, that doesn't happen. I played in so many of these events. And, you know, it's always, you know, you're always the one going, hey, do you mind if I join you? And for Cam to come up and do that with his dad, who's obviously a PGA gentleman as well, was a really cool moment. Got to play with them. And from there on, it just kept on being that type of thing, you know, because Justin Thomas and Mike, his dad, were out there and they played through us. He was just doing short game, but he went with us. And then I had Tommy Fleetwood one day. So it started out basically right when I got to Rochester, to be honest. Everything just was crazy as we kept on going. It just kept on going up, up, and up. But yeah, my whole thing there was just to make that cut. And on number 9 was my last hole on Friday, which is a really hard, you guys saw, dogleg right, par 4 up the hill, crazy, crazy difficult hole. And I was in that front right bunker, and I just needed to basically not hit it out of bounds 3 times. I'm going to make the cut. And I have like a 40-yarder to the back pin in that little peninsula from that front right bunker, and I'm just going, just get this on the green. And I hit to like 3 feet, tap it in for another 70, and the rest is history.
Michael, I want to back up on that a bit, because on that Friday afternoon, us as a broadcast crew, we filled in for ESPN for a bit, and I think it was the Friday, and we go out in the course for a couple hours, and my producer gets in my ear and goes, Mark, go find Blocky. And I think it was you just come off the par 5, the 4th, and you got to 5T. Are you laughing? Because you know what's coming. And I don't want to talk about the shot that you hit off 5T, which whistled over the top of my head.
But
on the very next hole, which was by far and away, in my opinion, the hardest hole on the course, I'm looking at this and they come to me and you in the fairway, which was a job in itself, because that tee shot was like driving it up a gnat's rear end.
Crazy, crazy.
Yeah. And so there you are in the fairway, quartering in wind, water left, bunkers right. It's nip and tuck a little bit. And you flush this driving iron in there to like 20 feet. And I remember saying to Frank Knobler, well, there are no remnants of the shank shot from back there on that par 5, because that was legit. Talk about that some.
Yeah, so I told John, my caddy, I wasn't going to look at any leaderboards throughout the entire week, and I accidentally saw one there on the par 5 that you're referring to, and it showed Block tied for second. And I immediately had my next shot with a 60-degree wedge on that par 5 to a back right pin. I held on for dear life, short side of myself, make a quick bogey with a lob wedge in my hand, which you just absolutely can't do in a major. And then the next hole, I go there and I almost kill you, make a quick double. So I go from 3 under in second place to even par like this. And then I know in my head that I've got, you know, 6, 7, 8, and 9 to go, which are absolutely brutal. And like we were talking about on 6, I think it went down as like one of the hardest holes in PGA history.
Yeah.
I played a practice round there, Mark, and I hit it right down the middle. Right down the middle. And I see a splash. I'm like, what was that? And my caddy's just like, yeah, there's a lake up there. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So I literally had to, because I only carried like 280. I had to take it down, you know, like what you're talking about, kind of the first cut with a baby cut. And if I cut it more than that, I'm in the water. It was a brutal shot.
Yeah, that hole is an absolute monster, especially at that point in the round, especially at that point of the championship of what you're trying to do. So I want to look ahead a lot here, but real quick, Michael, you know, there's been a lot of oxygen spent on Michael Block in the last couple of months. There's been a lot of words written, and I want to just remind people, you're not just some random dude who happened to show up in Rochester, right? Like Southern California Player of the Year, what, 10 of the last 11 years? Right. I mean, this is not you just showing up and having a great week. This is a career of a lot of really solid play. Do you think that kind of got lost in the whole moment?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I was in the golfing community in Southern California. I'm pretty well known prior, but outside of that, nobody knew who I really was. So it was finally the first time under the microscope of the golfing world that I brought more of my normal game, to be honest. I usually choke like a chicken, think too much. And in these big, big events, you know, shoot mid 70s in these PGA championships and miss a cut by a couple and I go home. Finally, everything kind of lined up and I played my game and I putted how I do when I go out and play, you know, here. And I'd never done that really before in an event. And I don't know if I'll ever do it again in a big event, to be honest. So yeah, it's, I got pretty lucky and now it's insane to me. I don't know what happened with me and why I blew up in this way in the golf world, but I'll go with it. I've had some good conversations with, you know, even DJ Khaled had me in his backyard having lunch and he's just going off and he said, he goes, Blocky, whatever it is right now, just go. He goes, just go right now. You got this topic, this time, this opportunity, go hard. Don't say no to anything. And that's what I've done. Just having a great time with it and try to keep a smile on my face, even though my life's been absolutely insane and it's going to be insane for the next 6 months as well.
Well, I think what happened real quick, Rick, I think why people sort of latched onto it and could identify with it is because they view anybody, people that are watching golf on like a major championship, they view anybody who isn't Rory, Scheffler, Rahm, and kind of came in as not a PGA Tour player, right? As a PGA pro, they view those people like the same as them. Like, oh, this guy just, he kind of like plays on the week. Like, and that lack of knowledge almost works to the advantage of somebody like you because it makes people more interested in the story because they can almost see themselves in that role, even though nobody watching has been, you know, California player of the year in 10 of the last 11 years. So I think that aspect of it, almost this illiteracy when it comes to like who guys are outside of the top 50 in the world, almost worked to your advantage throughout that week.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, I mean, the coolest part and what's helped a lot is that I've been able to play with so many of these guys now. They're out on tour, and I realize what they do and how good they are at what they do, and try to just get a little bit from each one of them and be able to do it under those circumstances. But you know, the first 2 days I didn't have really anyone follow me. I had my family and friends and a couple of people, and that was it. And then all of a sudden, I show up on Friday and I've got New York literally behind me. For the next 36 holes, which is beyond special to say the least, and something I'd never had in my entire life. And I was just so thankful that I didn't collapse. You know, I thought, I'm like, oh, when's the 81 coming? When's the 82 coming? When am I going to blow up? And I thought that was going to happen like what Mark talked about on that par three. And I got my feet underneath me. And Mark, my thought was the rest of the day, that day to finish off that round. And then also the next 2 days was, and when I always go back to, because I mean, I've puzzled it, you know, every once in a while, because I come from the inside. Mm-hmm. I was just hands in tight to my left side through impact, hands in tight through the impact zone, which all created just that little baby cut, and I started just hitting this baby cut, and I was hitting everything 10 to 20 yards shorter than I could, but I hit them like that because my caddy and I realized really quickly that I was hitting my spot with that. And when I'd go back to my normal shot and try to 700 170 and hit, I was pulling it. So we just hit this little baby cut, hands in tight, for the rest of the tournament, and it worked out beautifully.
That's such a great lesson, you know, that go-to for all the aspirant golfers that want to do better under pressure. I want to talk about that weekend because, look, you play great on Saturday. Then on Sunday, you draw on with McIlroy, who is like crowd favorite, right? And I remember being down in the fairway waiting for the tee shots, and your group walks to the tee, and ordinarily it's Rory that's serenaded. But people are going off there shouting, blocky, blocky, and they're going crazy. And it was like Rory was the understudy and you were the main guy. So my question here is, the adrenaline must have been rampant, and the pressure of that first tee shot on the final day and playing alongside McIlroy, I mean, that's real, isn't it?
Oh, you know, to go from what I had nothing of even just on Thursday and Friday, so just the day before, you know, Saturday got me kind of, it was crazy too Saturday because I had Rosie, and it was raining and every single person still came out under the umbrellas and it was muddy out there and whatever else. But somehow I was able to just to sit there and focus. My caddy kept me calm. He was singing Dreams, the song, to me while we're walking in the rain. And just the whole thing just was perfect. And somehow I was able to kind of stay there in my little bubble and enjoy the moment, which was the craziest thing, that I was actually able to enjoy the moment and not just absolutely start hosling everything into the bushes like I did on five.
So good. Okay, we're going to continue this conversation with Michael Block, but first we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners. Did you know more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Spoiler alert, your feet don't have to hurt. And I know foot biomechanics can be complex, but solving foot pain should be simple. It's a signature orthotic shape of the super feet insoles that give you the comfort and support where you need it the most. It redistributes and reduces stress and strain on your entire body. Think about those long walks on a golf course and how uncomfortable your feet can get. Well, they don't have to. And Superfeet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet. When your feet feel good, so do you. It is one of the most important parts of your overall health and well-being. And for a limited time, Superfeet is having its biggest sale of the year. Go to superfeet.com to save 25% off site-wide and get free shipping. Hurry, sale pricing ends June 5th.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we're back. There's actually a great question here from the chat that I want to hit from Garrett here, Michael. And it says, there are shots throughout golf history that live in a space of their own. With that ace you made with Rory, how does it feel to have one of those shots that has found its spot in golf archives? And I think really, Michael, I mean, I certainly agree with this sentiment, right? That is a shot, the ace, the dunk on 15, that will be replayed how many times and how many years into PGA Championship history. And every year, every moment it's played, it's like, wow, how do you even wrap your brain around that?
I don't. I have yet to. I still can't believe it even happened myself, considering that's the only tournament hole-in-one I've ever had in my thousands upon thousands of tournament rounds. And for it to happen on a Sunday in the PGA Championship when I'm actually, you know, in the top 20 and I'm playing with Rory McIlroy, and that's the hospitality tent section. And it's a big amphitheater. You know, you have 18 right behind it, 17 and 18 right behind it too. The crowd was insane. The crowd, no one really knows this, but because I just basically go like this after I make the hole one, like, oh, thanks. The reason being was I didn't see it. Well, when I got on the tee box, Rory had gone and he misses the green. and I just stand on the tee box, and the entire crowd stands up and gives me a standing ovation. and this is before I even hit the shot. And so then I stand up there. I'm like, this is incredible. And then I hit that little kind of modified hold off 7-iron, 152, and it's kind of going at it. And I'm just glad I'm hitting that green, because that green is brutal.
Yeah.
Super narrow, just hit the green, because if I don't hit that green, I'm probably making a bogey. And so it's at it, so I'm super stoked. And, you know, then obviously Roy turns around and tells me that it went in. And that's even cooler, is that I had Roy McIlroy tell me that my ball got went in the hole rather than, you know, me seeing it. But, yeah, and then, you know, after that, the crowd kind of made the same standing ovation noise that they did prior. So that's why I was just like, well, thank you, you know. And then I couldn't believe it until, you know, it took me, my God, 50 yards of walking before I even really believed, honestly. It wasn't BS. Really, before I actually believed that ball went in the hole.
So good. Now, the rocket ship has taken off since the PGA Championship, right? I mean, you go to Valhalla, you shoot a 63. You've turned up with a couple of Maxes, Homa, Verstappen, the big cat. I mean, was there a moment, or how many moments since the PGA Championship have you just thought in your brain, I can't believe I'm here right now. I cannot believe I'm doing this.
10 of them where I go, this would have never, ever, ever even been possible without the game of golf.
Yeah.
You know, and I always talk about how the game of golf has built my house, pays for the food on my table. And now it's allowing me to meet the most amazing people in the world and have these life experiences that I would have never dreamt of in my life. And where I'm flying to Qatar one moment, and literally the next day I'm flying to go help Tiger in his junior invitational up at Pebble Beach. I mean, it's like, come on, how's this real?
Where are you finding the energy? Because I remember being done Sunday night after the PGA, and I was whipped, and I wasn't hitting 280 golf shots like you were. And then you get the call to go and play at Colonial, and you had to have been running on empty there. So I'm wondering, were you finding the mental and emotional energy to do this stuff, travel around the world, come back, be club pro, golf teacher, lesson guy? What is the fountain here, man?
I'm really enjoying flights, right? I'm really enjoying being on the airplane. The flight to Qatar is 15 and a half, 16 hours. And I mean, I loved it. I had to like force me off of it, you know? And I enjoyed the flight, enjoyed the time to actually kind of grasp everything that's happening. And then, like I kind of mentioned, my new favorite thing in the whole world, and I've been just starting to do this since the PGA, is just bringing my dog to work a lot and getting in the golf cart like he loves to do. And we go out and we chase the birds around the lakes and just kind of spend time out there with my puppy, and really allows me to kind of get re-energized. And yeah, I'm beat. I'm worn out. But at the same time, I know that this isn't going to happen forever. So I'm going to go hard right now, and I'm okay with it. It's all beautiful stuff. I mean, I love being here with you guys right now, and I love doing everything that's come, you know, for tuition that I've had. So I've got no problem with it. It's nothing's painful. I'm cool with it. So I'm just having fun. And I got a lot of things. You should see my month in November. I'm literally, I think, here for 4 days in the month of November. So it's crazy.
Yeah, that's why. You mentioned playing with different, a lot of different tour pros and guys that you've gotten the opportunity to play with over the last, not just this year, but historically. I'm curious about, is there one player's skill that you're like, yeah, that's great. Like one that I run to in this is like watching JT hit short game shots. You're just like, that's nuts. Like, that's remarkable. And I'm curious, just from your perspective, who's somebody that you played with that you're like, man, that guy does some stuff that either I can't do or I can't do consistently anyway, that has stood out to you?
I'd say by far and away the biggest inspiration for me has been Patrick Cantlay. Mm. You know, we've been doing little home money games around Orange County for the last 5-6 years when he's around. And to watch him play golf, to watch him basically be a robot, I mean, it's just boom, boom, doesn't miss. He putts it so well. His short game's unbelievable. But there's nothing there that you're going, wow, that was crazy. You know, it wasn't anything like, I mean, he hits it, you know, 15 yards by me, which is nothing too crazy. and he strikes his irons. You know, he's probably a full club. He's a club longer than I am, but it's just his consistency. He just doesn't seem to miss. But that's inspired me a lot, where it's just like, if I can just play my personal game, but be more consistent with it, I can start to at least kind of hang out with these guys. Of course, Pat still beats me 75-80% of the time. But you know, every once in a while, kind of like, you know, in the PGA, I can sneak in there, and let's just say I have six more events, kind of, which I do, scheduled over the next 5 months. I'm realistic with, I'm going to have two really bad ones. Hopefully not DFL, but you know, I'll probably have two that aren't the best. I'm hoping for two that are kind of right around the cut, and I'm either just making that cut or just missing the cut. And then two that I'm up there and I'm competing and I'm having a little closer thing like I did at the PGA.
Rick, I want to ask one question. This is, I guess, the golf teacher in me coming out, because everyone wants to get better, right? So my question, Michael, is, you speak of playing with Cantlay and you've been alongside Rory and all these guys. It's hard not to look upon them and start to kind of play their game, or at least try to play their game. But when I did watch you, you're awfully disciplined. You stick to what you do well. So I think there's a lesson in there I want you to share, please.
I try, you know, it's one of these things that I have with my current caddy, Mark. His name's John Jackson. He's a full-time caddy at Pebble Beach. I'm very comfortable with John in the fact where I'm okay with going, you know what, John, I'm going to hit this 4-iron 180 cut, rather than me going, you know what, no, 180, that's my hard 7-iron, or that's my, you know, I'm very okay with just being super normal and hitting these shots where I'm not trying to be someone I'm not. And I find that so important to have that confidence with somebody, because I've so many other people I've had as caddies or played with people, I'm trying, oh, you're hitting 7, I'm hitting 7, you know, or hey, my caddy, I'm trying to impress my caddy. I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I trying to impress my caddy? No, I have John as a friend, and John knows my game very well, and he's okay with me hitting a 7-iron 152 on 15 in the PGA, which back in the day, I'd be ripping a draw 9-iron.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and so playing the shots that you know you can pull off at that point, and that's such a big thing. If you watch me warm up, Mark, I'm hitting cuts. All my irons, cut, covering, cut. When I normally get on the golf course, it's a draw all day long. Mm-hmm. And John knows not to tell me to hit a cut with an iron, and he knows to don't tell me to hit a draw with my driver. You know, and those are the things. And like I've always talked about, I have 14 girlfriends, and my girlfriends are all my clubs, right? And they're right here, and they all have different personalities, right? And each one does something a little different. The turf interaction is a little better or different. The amount of draw is different from a 7-iron to an 8-iron to a 6-iron. And one of the biggest things that everyone always tries to do that I try to teach, they try to hit the same shot with every single club. And I'm like, what does it do? You know, especially under the gun, what does that club do when you're feeling pressure with your friends for a large amount of money or just a club championship or whatever it might be? How do you react under that situation? And you need to figure that out, because there's a lot of different scenarios between driving range golf, for hitting giggle golf, club championship golf, PGA Tour golf. You know, it's so much different, and you have to find your way and your path depending on what situation you have.
One more. I'm guessing of those 14 in your harem, the putter is number one, right?
Oh. She's usually who I take to bed. She's been beautiful to me. She saves me. She's there for me, you know, when I'm having a bad day. She's there for me when I'm having a great day, and then I can take it deep. So when I'm not striking it well, I'm cool with an even par, one under, maybe one over, depending on the course. But then at Oak Hill, it's a degree and a half aloft on that. And really? It was rolling so beautifully on those greens. And here's the funny part is that I rolled the rock better than I ever rolled in my life. I hit short game shots I never hit in my life. I hit my irons great. I hit driver down the fairway, and I struggled to finish 15th. That's how good these guys on the tour are. That's 14 guys still beat me, and I brought my A-plus game all around. So that's why I'm not on the PGA Tour. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to have my A-plus game and still finish 15th. if I have my A-plus game against club professionals, I'm going to win. And I like that.
Yeah.
That's actually very, very insightful and a nice way to, or different way to look at it. And I was just kind of thinking about this, Michael, trying to put myself in your shoes. And obviously, you know, I'm sure it's been such a gift the course of what has happened to you in the last couple of months, but is there anything that's a curse too, right? I mean, I put myself in your shoes and I think it'd be only human to be like, okay, like when, like, are people going to care about this forever? Do I now have more anxiety to play in these events that I'm going to play? Because now expectation, it was nice when I was flying under the radar, expectations are a lot higher right now. Like this would, if I was in your shoes, I would feel a level of anxiety, honestly.
Yeah. I would say the anxiety part of it comes from the expectation level that everyone has for me when I go play nine holes here, or I play against a YouTube person, or I do whatever. And you know, and when I go play in Cabo next week, everyone's like, oh, you know, I've got so many people that really look up to me and they're big fans and I love it. And they're huge supporters of me and they expect me to go win in Cabo. I'm like going, dude, I hope I make the cut in Cabo. And then from there, maybe I, you know, we'll see how well I can do, but I have no idea. I'd have never played the golf course, but yeah, the expectation level, I can't get over the whole hater thing, man. You know, I know I said a comment about the Rory thing and the drives or whatever. And it's just like, I've been interviewed a million times and I've said 8 million different comments. And, you know, of course you make mistakes in what you say and how the context comes out, which I've learned to understand. I'm sure I'm going to still say some stupid things and do some stupid things and whatever, but yeah, just the whole pressure of it, because I have so much pressure that I want to do well for my fans and I want to just shove it in the face of the haters, which I know, like I said, I got six events lined up and those haters can't wait for me to fail.
What did Tiger tell you?
He said, he said, I've had, hey, great year, keep it going type of thing. You know? Yeah, he was great. I love going up there. And then obviously Max and I hung out on hole 11 at MPCC, hitting shots for the players, and Max just hanging out, eating pizza, having fun with me.
That's awesome. Tiger is somebody that I have found, and I don't know how much you guys got a chance to talk, but he sees everything. I'm sure he watched the whole day on Sunday at the PGA, and just to hear him talk as nerdy as possible about golf is so much fun. Like there are some points where I'm like, I don't even know if he's still talking about golf. Like he's talking about things that I've never heard of before. But I don't know how much. Did you have any of those interactions with him or get to view them from up close at all?
Not really. We had a quick conversation, but nothing into that means. The funny thing is, we both grew up. You know, I didn't grow up here, but you know, we're both pretty much the same exact age, 47. Yeah. And but never really played against each other. He was obviously upper echelon stud. I'm just a barely played D2 college golf. Didn't play AGGA, didn't play any of that stuff. You know, so we took completely different paths. And the cool part is we've passed quite a few times, mm-hmm. Me playing against him, but I never really had the interaction. But it's pretty darn cool to have him and the TGR, you know, live contact me and want me to come to his event and be their honorary starter and hit shots for all of his guys and stuff like that. So for... He doesn't need to come up to me and say that, you know, when, yeah, I watched you do it and all this stuff. But for him to come up to me, shake my hand, and he's a really cool guy. Once you're kind of in his world, right? Because that guy has so much going on. But he was great. But no, I didn't get to really talk to him as much as I would love to. I'd love to go tee it up with him at some point in my life. But I don't know if that's going to ever happen.
Okay, Michael, I think we're gonna put a pin in this for now. We know we've got you in Cabo next week. You've been teasing us about what the next couple of months might look like. Where can we expect? Are you going to be playing golf on the moon? Are you going to be showing up anywhere? Like, what? Where can we get our fill of Blocky moving forward?
When does this get released?
You're live right now.
Well, so yeah, I'm in Cabo in the PGA Tour event, Worldwide Technologies event, Diamante next week, which I'm beyond excited. I'm home for a day and I go to a fun event, the Mayakama Pro Member up in Napa. home for 2 days, and then I'm going to go do a 100-hole hike at Pebble Beach on the hay for a youth encore. Cool. And then I then stay there for a week and play in the Pebble Beach Invitational hosted by TaylorMade.
Yep.
So I'm there for the entire week. I'm home for 3 days, and then I'm on a long flight. Let's just say I'm on a long flight, and I can't quite say it until tomorrow. But I'm going to go somewhere very cool that I've never been and play in a big event, which I'm fortunate to be in. And then off for a while, off in December pretty much, except for an event out in the desert. And then I'm in the American Express out at PJ West. I'm in the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines the next week. And then I'm in the PGA Championship again in May at Valhalla. And there's a couple other events that I'm in the talks with at playing in the early part of 2024 as well.
All right. Let the speculation begin on long flights, places Michael's never played, opportunities. We'll have this cracked within a couple of minutes here. But thank you so much for the time, for joining us, and for chatting a little bit of golf. Really appreciate it.
No, you guys are great. I appreciate you, what you guys all do. And Mark, hopefully I'll see you out on the course. And if you're following me, that's a good sign.
A good thing. Yeah, good Torrey Pines late Sunday afternoon would be a good thing.
Look forward to it, my friend.
See ya.
There you go. Michael Block for Kyle Porter, for Mark Immelman. I'm Rick Gaiman. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
CBS Sunday, after The Equalizer.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
It's the season finale.
Everyone's looking for something.
Of Tracker.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker, CBS season finale Sunday after The Equalizer on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.